Happy New Year and welcome to 2016. This is the Bob Davis Podcast, the New Talk Podcast 452. Get ready because the storylines are about to change and it's time to get back up on the political horse as we kick off the new year. Well, it being a new year, I'm sure that some people will resolve to do various things. And you may be in the market to sell a house or to buy a house or business property. And when it comes to real estate, the one thing that is true, there's one constant, and that is that things change. Now, most people know, but you may not. But in the North Metro in Minneapolis and St. Paul, growth is exploding up there due to highway improvements and other things. I have some friends up, and I've been going up there a lot lately, and I'm amazed at the growth in the North Metro. And the fact is that one of the things that's changed in the North Metro in Minneapolis and St. Paul is that there are now more buyers than sellers. So again, if you're in the market to sell, and especially if you're in the market to buy, you need a real estate professional that understands the market. And so I've been introducing prideofhomes.com to listeners and subscribers to the Bob Davis Podcast. Prideofhomes.com is a licensed real estate agent and a real estate investor with expertise to share with you. I'm talking about Eric and Aram Lucero, a husband and wife team with Luke Team Real Estate in the North Metro and prideofhomes.com. And Eric has said many times that really the challenge is to understand the market and understand the people that are buying and selling. So in the North and Northwest Metro, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, Champlin, where I was just last night, as a matter of fact, all along the North Metro 94 corridor, if you want real estate expertise, think about Eric and Aram Lucero, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. You know, the Fed just raised interest rates. That's going to affect buying or selling. And you, again, have to have people who are real estate professionals with knowledge of the market so that you can find a property that fits your needs or a buyer that can obtain the right financing and is ready to go to close. Again, as a husband and wife team, Eric and Aram Lucero can respond quickly. And when you combine that with customer service at Luke Team Real Estate, which they're famous for, you're good to go. Again, I mentioned that the North Metro is growing quickly. So remember Eric and Aram Lucero and prideofhomes.com and Luke Team Real Estate in the North and Northwest Metro. For real estate expertise, Eric and Aram Lucero, thank you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. You can reach out to them now at 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. Well, I was coming home from yoga tonight, and I thought, I pretty much know what I want to say, and I don't want to ruin it by going through and reading a bunch of news stories and doing a news update for the first podcast of the year to get people started out, which would be my natural inclination. Okay, here's what's been going on in the holidays. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that. And I decided on the way home, boy, I know what I want to say, and so I'm just going to go say that. And here's what this podcast is about. The storylines are about to change, and this is for the people who are interested in politics. So this is a political podcast for the first podcast of the year, and I want to do this not so much to predict the future, but to just kind of alert you to the next step in the political process, which is going to be, and we're talking primarily about coverage, but it's also a reality with politics. So in less than 30 days, by the time you hear this podcast, the Iowa caucuses will have been completed. The precinct caucuses in Iowa, which are the first period in the nation where people will cast some kind of vote for president. And without going into a long tangent about how the precincts work in Iowa and how they work in Minnesota, a lot of Minnesotans are very familiar with precincts. If they've gone to them, if they haven't gone to a precinct caucus, then they wouldn't know. But in Iowa, they do things a little bit differently, but they're going to come out with a vote, and then that is going to be amplified all over the country. Right now, the campaigning in Iowa is at a feverish pace. It's only going to increase as we progress toward February 1st, the date of the Iowa caucuses. And as soon as February 1st is over, they're going to shift to New Hampshire and South Carolina, which are the next states that will have primaries. Or some sort of caucus or whatever it is that an individual state does. And over the week, last couple of weeks during Christmas and New Year's, I'm starting to see the storylines begin to change. And what do I mean by storylines? Again, without a long and involved tangent, which is something that happens to me, I will I'll start talking about something and go off on a long tangent and never get back to my point. So I'm trying to force myself not to do that. But one of the things that you see these days is media goes out and it covers events. People say things. People have a rally. They make a statement that gets reaction in media, in social media, Twitter, Facebook, the all over the place. And they send the information back to New York or Washington or Atlanta or wherever the network is headquartered. And editors and writers rehash, and run with the outrage or the thing that is getting reaction until the next thing happens. And this is the great weakness of our media. And this is what I mean by storylines. They will run with a storyline until they find a new storyline, and they'll run with that. And one of the things they don't like is stale storylines. If you have a new storyline, you've got something new to talk about. It's a fresh new line of attack. People are going to tune in. They're going to watch. They're going to react. They're going to click. They're going to make comments. And everyone's happy. And that's how the whole business works. It's all based on meters. It's all based on analytics. It's all based on getting people to pay attention to your outlet for whatever the reason. And one of the things I noticed in the last couple of presidential cycles, and it certainly was also true in the off cycles, so-called off cycles, was this habit of developing storylines. Because what they do now is, in politics in particular, they don't go out and find a news story. What they do is they go cover an event and get reaction to that event. And I just want to say before I talk about storylines, the guy who has really found that weakness, and I guess what I'm trying to say is they don't have large staffs of reporters or newsrooms in the sense of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times in its golden age, filled with reporters looking for news stories. So we have Rewrite, and we have reporters, and we have columnists, and everybody is trying to find something to write about, find some piece of hot information to get out to the public. As in somebody, there was a break-in at the Watergate. Let's find out what really happened. We don't do that anymore in media. Most of the time in media, what people do is they read stories that somebody else wrote. They find a new line. They attack that line, and they get people to watch based on that. And then the pundits all argue about that particular storyline, and they work it until there's really nothing left, and then they work something else. And Donald Trump, the Republican candidate for the nomination, one of them, has really turned it into a high art of exploiting that weakness, because the big networks and the newspapers are not looking for a news story. They are sending out reporters to cover events to try to find something to get people to react to. There's been very little news coverage, for example, of how Donald Trump earned his fortune and how he runs his business and what his views on issues are. A little bit here and there, but nothing really. But what the big channels and the big media wants to talk about are his comments about breast milk or something. That's what they're working off of. Well, the storylines up to this point have been, first of all, Donald Trump is going to fade. He's a flash in the pan, and don't worry, and so forth. When that didn't happen, the inevitable storyline is that Donald Trump is going to be the candidate, and people are starting to wake up to that. And what's the establishment going to do about it, and everything else on the Democrat side? Initially, it was Bernie Sanders is really giving Hillary Clinton a run for her money, and looks like it's going to be a race, or Martin O'Malley or whatever. And now the storyline is that 60, 70, 80% of the Democrats support Hillary Clinton, and she's the inevitable candidate. And the storyline is, she going to be able to overcome Benghazi and her husband and everything else in order to win the presidency? They don't even talk about whether or not she's going to win the nomination, because the storyline is, she's the nominee, she's going to be the next president. That's their thing, unless Donald Trump does something. Well, the storylines are going to change very quickly about the next week or two. You're going to start to see the storylines change. And the first storyline that will be reintroduced is that Jeb Bush is going to make a comeback. I'm already seeing evidence of this. I'm already hearing people behind the scenes talk about this, that Jeb Bush is going to make a comeback. And his organization has been rejiggered, and that you're going to see that happen. And it's funny because I was someplace, I think I was in Iowa someplace, and I remember saying somewhere that I thought that and this is back when I was still predicting the future, but it was this year, so it's kind of funny. It was last year, 2015, that I felt that Republicans had to look forward to the possibility of two candidates, either Donald Trump or eventually Jeb Bush being forced on them. And I think that storyline is going to come back. I think the Jeb Bush storyline is going to come back. Now, people say, well, how can you say that? Well, here's the thing. If Bush stays in and Ben Carson gets out and eventually Rand Paul gets out and eventually Ted Cruz gets out and eventually, you know, the other 27 people running for president get out, because eventually they will. And I say this because where people are about to vote, very quickly after the Iowa caucus, you're going to see campaigns shut down. Carson's already shaking up his campaign. If a certain candidate, it doesn't matter who, because I'm not for any of them, but if a particular candidate doesn't win Iowa, let's say, if Ted Cruz doesn't win Iowa, that's going to have a very negative effect on his storyline, which is he's the next heir apparent. He's the guy who's, if he wins Iowa, then that's going to give a lift to that storyline. None of it makes any sense, because you can win Iowa and lose New Hampshire. You can lose Iowa and still be the nominee. You can lose all the primaries and have a chance of being the nominee, unless you're just nothing. So what's going to happen is campaigns are going to do better and worse. People are going to get in and get out, mostly get out on both sides of the political spectrum, as people begin to vote and we start to see what's going on. The reason for the Jeb renewal is that we have had, and this is going to be a very interesting story going forward in 2016, because so far all of the polls show a tremendous lead for Donald Trump. Remember that I told you that, you know, one of the storylines, which I thought was amusing, was, well, the only people that support Trump are uneducated white men. And I saw a poll over the week that the last couple of weeks that said, you know, that his support is now broad and diverse, and that they're starting to see college-educated Republicans say that they would back Trump. And I told you that as he progressed and as his familiarity progressed, that his demographics would fill in, and sociographics would fill in, and that's exactly what has happened in the last couple of weeks, and I imagine that will continue. So here's the thing, and this will be a huge storyline if it's true. These polls, as I told you before in the long and involved podcast about polling, are based on voter screens. They're trying to find likely voters, which are very, very hard to find when an election is a year away or 2 years away. It's very hard to find likely voters even before a caucus in Iowa. I'm reminded of the Iowan who said, well, we usually go into the caucuses with four or five candidates in our minds that are our favorites, and then we winnow it down. So the caucuses are very hard to predict outcomes. And that's also true in Minnesota. I think I said in one of the podcasts, there's a whole bunch of other business that's done in these caucuses, and the actual presidential vote is held at the very end, because then the people are brought in to do the presidential vote, so they do all this other business, party business, in their party, their precinct party caucus. You either caucus with the Democrats, you caucus with the Republicans, and then at the very end, people write down on a piece of paper basically who they want to have be the presidential nominee, and then that goes into a bag, goes into the back room, and old ladies count it. So that's how it all works. It's not a ballot where you go in and you use a voting machine, unless you're in New Hampshire or a state that has an actual primary. And then individual states have party primaries. Some are open, some aren't open. Some have you know, nonpartisan primaries where it's just a primary. You go in and vote the ballot that you want, depending on how you're registered. So asking people how they're going to vote, if they're likely to vote, is very, very hard to do for pollsters going forward. So the polls have all showed that Donald Trump they keep showing that Donald Trump has this huge lead among Republicans. And so if for some reason Trump doesn't win Iowa and is the fourth or fifth guy down in Iowa, and then he goes to New Hampshire, and especially in New Hampshire because of its proximity to New York, if he has a third, he's the fourth or fifth candidate down the rung in New Hampshire. So let's suppose someone like Bush, God forbid, no, I'm kidding. So let's suppose somebody like Bush wins the New Hampshire primary and Donald Trump is third or fourth. That's going to change the picture. But the story there is going to be, what's wrong with these pollsters and why are the polls quote unquote wrong? And I've been saying, beware these polls and beware these soothsayers, because they could be wrong. The polls could be wrong. Now, personally, I don't think they're that wrong, because when you see a result like that over and over again, and you see a result like that starting to fill in with demographics, then you have to say, well, it's clear that popular opinion favors Donald Trump right now. But we'll see what happens when people start to vote. So if the, and I think it's almost inevitable that he's not, unless he wins every primary rapidly, then it'll be over by March. In fact, Ted Cruz just said this thing will be over by March. And at least over after Super Tuesday. So Super Tuesday is March 1st. And then there's another spate of primaries, I think, around the 20th. So if Donald Trump doesn't win a majority of those primaries, the storyline's going to change. And then you figure in these different candidates getting in and getting out. And if Bush stays in, suddenly the 4% becomes the 6%, becomes the 10%, becomes the 20%, becomes the 12% or whatever. And then he's the only alternative, let's say, to a Trump or a Rubio. Now, I don't talk about this on the Democrat side, because on the Democrat side, you don't have that many candidates, and it's really going to be between Bernie and Hillary. But the same effect is also true. If Bernie Sanders wins Iowa, and I think there's a good chance that he will, and he wins New Hampshire, and he wins a couple of other primaries on Super Tuesday, then that storyline is going to change. So look for the predictability of the race to either solidify on both sides or to start to break apart. And that's where this Jeb Bush is going to come back narrative comes in. So as I look at what I've been reading all week, that's one of the things to look for, is that particular storyline, because no one is going to be more surprised than the people who have said, this is the guy, when people actually start voting. No one is going to be more surprised when the polls are not necessarily predictive of really complicated political processes in Midwestern agricultural states that are nothing like the rest of the country, or in Northeastern old line industrial states that really aren't bellwethers of the country anymore. So just look for that. And I think, you know, all the things we've been hearing up to the present are all based on polling. They're not based on anybody voting. They're not based on any kind of reality. So this whole thing is going to really solidify as we get into 2016, right after February 1st. So be prepared for that. And then just one more point about Jeb Bush and the Jeb Bush coming back storyline. Keep in mind that the establishment really, really doesn't like Donald Trump, and they are terrified about these poll numbers that show Trump where he is. And if people vote anything like those poll numbers, they're going to pull out all the stops to bring back a candidate that reflects their desires, and that's Jeb Bush. They wanted Bush from the beginning. They want Bush over Rubio. There's all this talk about how they're shifting their resources to Rubio. Don't believe it. I still think that people counting Jeb out are making a mistake at this point. And again, I have to throw out the disclaimer that I'm not for any of these candidates. It's just interesting watching this pageantry. So those are some of my thoughts that were running through my head on the way back from yoga tonight about the political process at the very beginning of the official election sequence, which begins February 1st in Iowa in 2016. And I love talking about yoga, because when I do, I get to talk about Hydras. One of the things I've noticed in yoga, and I'm sure the people that do CrossFit or Orange Theory or SoulCycle or anything that's really strenuous have noticed, is that dehydration is really the enemy of performance. You really have a degraded performance and a tougher practice when you're dehydrated. The thing about yoga is you're in crowded rooms of over 100 degrees with a lot of humidity. You sweat a lot and you can get dehydrated really fast. And I don't think that many of us realize how much we can get dehydrated, because we think if we drink a lot of water, that that's going to fix it, but it doesn't. And this is where Hydrus comes in. The reality is that with varying levels of dehydration, you accept soreness and some pain that degrades your practice and slows recovery. So it gets in the way of you really making progress in whatever it is that you do, whether it's CrossFit or yoga or, you know, something else. And I discovered Hydrus, and it actually amazed me that it worked as well as it did, that it literally transformed my yoga practice. And I know it can do the same for you, which is why I talk about it. It doesn't matter what you do. It is called Hydrus, H-Y-D-R-U. There's a scientific explanation for what it does, but it uses an exclusive nanosome technology system to get electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. You drink it before, during, and after practice. It really helps with recovery. So the next day, you wake up and you're like, I'm ready to go again. You feel much better. And this has been proven with power lifters and wrestlers and tennis athletes and lots of other people. And you'll find that out if you go to the Hydrus website. HydrusPerformance.com, H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. Anyway, I don't want to go on and on about it. Go to HydrusPerformance.com. You can sign up to get a free sample. You can try it. If you do, let me know how it works for you. It doesn't matter what you do. Bike, CrossFit, yoga, SoulCycle, workout with weights, anything that can be physically demanding, Hydrus can make a huge change and effect in your daily practice. And thanks to Hydrus for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. You can click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, the Hydrus banner, or go directly to HydrusPerformance.com. Join the performance revolution. It's real. Let me take a little sip of Hydrus. Yeah, I am I'm doing one of these podcasts where I don't have any notes. I'm just you know, I kind of had this in my head that I wanted to get this out So that's what this is all about. And I can't really do a walk and talk because it's too cold. I mean, it's not that cold, but then, you know, it's a whole long and involved thing. So this is kind of a sit and talk as opposed to a walk and talk. But I'm struck as I read all the coverage and as I look at what is going on and as I think about what starts to happen when things solidify and the predictability of the race changes, which is inevitable. Every time, either it becomes more predictable or less predictable, but it becomes predictable in a way that you didn't expect. So predicting the future is really a fun little parlor game, but that's about it, because politics is an art. We are living in a society where we expect institutions to be able to tell us everything about what's going to happen in the future, or at least we're being taught that you know, that we've got this. This is all under control. And you see it everywhere. You know, the computers are under control, and this is under control, and that's under control, and government, we got this under control, and we can do this. And there's this veneer of competency in everything. And you see it in politics with what I call the political money ballers, who go out and they crunch numbers. They are the poor man's version of the quants on Wall Street, who are actually really are smart, who are using complex statistical analysis to make certain kinds of predictions and buys based on them. In politics, it's the same approach. We're going to take statistics and we're going to make certain predictions with statistics. And my experience is you can do that, and you can do it pretty regularly until suddenly you can't do it anymore, until there's a major trend line change that is not foreseeable, especially when you're basing your information on political polls, which are highly unreliable, as I have said earlier in this podcast, as I have done podcasts about. Anyway, there's all kinds of issues with sample sizes and all kinds of issues with how questions are asked and all kinds of issues, not the least of which are related to people can't predict what they're going to do when they walk into the voting booth. This is an art. I mean, politics for the politician and for the people that do it is an art. And one of the things that I wanted to get into, and I'm not quite sure how, but I had a conversation over the weekend with some people that I want to talk a little bit about. And one of the things that I notice is when you go to these meetings, and it's so interesting to me, people just want to be heard. They really don't want to have a conversation about issues. There's a big space between the candidates and what they're doing and the voters, and the space in the middle is substantive information. And people have, we've already solidified into camps for political candidates, and not a single person has voted. That's the effect of the media. That's what the media has done. They've created these camps for individuals based on things they've said, not necessarily based on what's best for the country, because you know all of the ins and outs about immigration. What if the way the media covered politics is that they didn't talk about personalities at all before any votes were cast and talked only about issues? So you want to know about ISIS? We have sent reporters to embed with ISIS, and we're going to interview them, and we're going to talk to academics about what it means and the Middle East, and we're going to look at all sides of it so that you know the issue. What if there was no discussion of political candidates and the only discussion was in-depth about issues, and people listened to each other when they talked about issues and considered their points of view? Because we don't have that. We have a media that's reached the point, and I talked earlier about the great weakness of our media, which is we don't cover news anymore. We don't have reporters that go out and cover news. We cover events. So if you're running for office, you have an event, and you say stuff, and what you say is covered. See, the planes are starting to come in, so you might be able to hear them in the background because I don't have the fire tonight. You hear what people have to say, and then that becomes the storyline. So Donald Trump makes a comment about breast milk, and that becomes the big storyline. He's brilliant, because what he's doing is he's playing that weakness over and over and over again to get his name out there, which is giving him huge name recognition. And it doesn't matter whether people like what he's saying or not, because all our media does is cover outrage and gin up outrage and response and reaction. And none of it's about issues. And what's happened is not a single vote's been cast. We aren't even into the election season yet. And people have already solidified on the candidate that they like or dislike. So you go to these meetings and people talk about stuff, and they start talking. And if you start to respond to what they said, so somebody will say, I think this, and you start to say, well, that's interesting. This is what I think. And before you even get a sentence out, they're jumping on what you say and repeating what they said before. This is where I get this whole, you know, they say, they blat out what they have to say, and then you say something, they blink, and they blat it out again, and they just keep doing that. That's what we consider discourse in this country, and this is a learned skill. People have seen this on television over and over and over again, and all these roundtables and all of these arguments and snark fests, and none of these people are actually necessarily in the story. They're just responding to what they saw last night, or what they saw on Twitter or Facebook, or what they read. They weren't there. They didn't actually experience it. So I can't say enough about how excited I am about being able to take people into these events and let them experience it, even if it's just with headphones on between their eyes or between their ears, you know, in full stereo, being able to experience these events, to hear the supporters and to hear what goes on and to hear me really report on the media, reporting on an event. And here's how the events work. If you haven't been to one, it's pretty simple. And the thing is, if you're waiting for the candidate to show up, you don't see this. They shuffle them in. They don't respond to questions. They only respond to the questions that they want. They don't have any time with the media. They get up in front. They make their statement. They turn around and they leave. And it's over. And that's it. And they're there to provide succor and to buoy up the people who are organizing for their campaign. That's why they come to Iowa. They're not coming to try to find votes to talk about issues. They're coming to get the people that are working for them to work harder and get more people out to vote so that they can get the most votes in the caucus or the primary. That's what all this feverish campaigning is about. And really, it's to activists who are going to be part of the Trump organization, or part of the Cruz organization, or part of the Rubio organization down there. And that's what the work in Iowa is all about. And that's what the work in New Hampshire is all about. So when you go to these events, they're very, very controlled. It's amusing to me and of great concern that what's happened is we have a media that thinks that covering an event like that is going out and putting a camera up and asking a gotcha question in the hopes that the guy will stumble and respond to it in such a way that that becomes the news story. That happens again and again and again. And if you want to know why Trump is leading, he actually tries to have that happen. He goes after that as a way to make that happen. He has realized that is the great weakness of our media. So the other thing that I want to say is that the other problem in our political discourse is everybody thinks they know how the media works. Everybody thinks that they are an expert in media, even if they were an electrician or a teacher or a mailman. They think that they're an expert in how the media operates, and they think they're an expert in how the messaging should be, and they think they know about the media. And they'll tell you. I mean, I've had people say to me, you know, well, the reason that you know, you're not on the radio anymore is that they're trying to destroy conservative talk radio. And I laugh because conservative talk radio is doing a fabulous job of destroying itself, you know, either appealing to a smaller and smaller audience or talking about nothing and being irrelevant completely. That's what it's doing. It's wrecking itself. There's not necessarily a conspiracy to it. The media doesn't have a mind. It's a mob. We grew up in a country that has, you know, three estates of government, as we've always been taught, that there's three estates, the judicial, the executive, and the legislative, you know, countervailing powers and all that, separation of powers and a constitutionally mandated sovereign, in the people that is delegated to these various parts of the government that is designed to actually govern, right? And we have that at the federal level, and we have 50 states with similar types of governments. And that's how it's supposed to work. And most people have been taught that the media is the fourth estate and that the media has this great responsibility, as well as somehow the fourth estate being it's really almost a fourth branch of government. That's what we were taught. But it isn't. It's a business. And as a business, it will do whatever it can do to make money. And if it can sell cheap sausage instead of expensive sausage and make money doing that, it will. And if it can make money by having people sit in a studio with no real preparation and just pay the technical people to shoot a beautiful studio to look credible and have pretty people talk about things, and that works in terms of getting ratings, that's what they'll do. We don't have, as I said three or four different times during this podcast, we're not in an era of journalism anymore that is based on reportage, that's based on getting both sides of the story, that's based on telling the story of a particular issue so that people understand the issue and can vote accordingly and then maybe pick a candidate that fits what they've learned. We don't do that anymore. We're very personality driven. We're very presidential driven. We're very focused on the lurid. We're very focused on how people look and what they say. And that's our great weakness in politics in this country. It's not parties. You hear this all the time that it's gridlock and it's these political parties. It's not the political parties. It's the fact that people have become very superficially focused on things because that's all that gets reported. And that's all that gets discussed, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or other kinds of social media or the cable news channels or the networks. So it's something to keep in mind. And what's really interesting with that mechanism is when the art of politics intervenes, the art of actually leading human beings in a democracy intervenes, and storylines can't be predicted, and things change rapidly because of either outside events, existential threats, economic issues, or because someone, a particular candidate, is particularly talented or has the interest behind him or her to change that storyline. That's the art of politics. And people don't realize that that's what's going on. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that unseen hand to have an impact in 2016 and very soon. Well, don't forget Hydrus, the new high-performance beverage that uses exclusive nanosome technology to deliver critical electrolytes with unrivaled speed and effectiveness without the sugar in traditional sports drinks. And I think that's the main thing to point out. If you drink any of these other hydration systems, usually they have sugar in them. That's what gets those electrolytes into your muscles. This is a different thing entirely. This gets the electrolytes into your muscles without sugar, and it's revolutionary, okay? So Hydrus, H-Y-D-R. U.S. It doesn't matter if you do yoga or CrossFit or lifting, or you have, you know, you've got kids that are doing collegiate sports or high school sports, Hydrus can help. HydrusPerformance.com. You click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcasts page. H-Y-D-R-U-S, Hydrus. And if you've made a resolution to look at buying a house or selling a house in the North Metro in 2016, you want to talk to Eric and Aram Lucero, the husband and wife team that has the flexibility and the expertise to help you do what you need to do. Here's their number, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100 for real estate expertise. Eric and Aram Lucero in the North and Northwest Metro, which is growing like crazy. Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, Champlin, and the North Metro 94 corridor. I mentioned change is the one constant in the real estate business, and it is now a seller's market. So if you're looking to buy, you need help. And if you're looking to sell, you need someone that really understands who's buying as well. So reach out to Eric and Aram Lucero, and thanks you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Now, if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, don't forget Alpha Systems. They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. If you go to the Alpha Systems website, which you can get to by clicking on that banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, it'll explain about how it works. There's a lot of people blogging about it in the aviation community. It's pretty amazing. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, thank you for listening on blogtalkradio.com, stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, and all of the syndication services. Thanks for checking out my new radio show on gcnlive.com, the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. And thank you for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm bdavis7843 on Instagram. And I want to say again, thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. I thanked a bunch of people on New Year's Eve, and I got to thank Sean and John for sending me yet more money, and we're going to use it all for campaign coverage in 2016, so it goes into the diesel fuel fund for Mobile Podcast Command. And thanks you guys again, and thanks for listening to Podcast 452, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Bump. Time is like an enemy, love is by the side. The more you cling to love, the more you're gonna lose your mind.